Case number 19-3050, United States of America versus Walter Mabry, appellant. Mr. Axum for the appellant, Mr. Coleman for the appellee.
May it please the court, Tony Axum.
Good morning.
I'm Tony Axum representing Walter Mabry, and I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. When someone wants to end a consensual encounter, one way to do so is by walking away. One of Mr. Mabry's companions tried to slowly walk away here, and officers promptly stopped him and patted him down. The stop of Mr. Mabry's companion contributed to the totality of the circumstances that conveyed to Mr. Mabry that he was not free to leave. And in fact, for some time, Mr. Mabry did not try to leave, but remained against the fence in submission to the officer's authority. The other circumstances that contributed to the totality of circumstances establishing Mr. Mabry's seizure included the time of night. It was late into the evening. It was dark. Mr. Mabry was on a limited span of sidewalk. Multiple officers approached in unison. There were three officers. They had pulled up abruptly. During the course of the encounter, another marked police car arrived. The car that the officers arrived in and parked, they parked directly in front of Mr. Mabry and his companions. So that Mr. Mabry had a wrought iron fence behind him and the police car and the officers in front of him. As the officers exited the car, they began to corral Mr. Mabry and his companions, stopping one from walking away, as I said. They got out with purpose and they approached each person directly as though someone had committed a crime. And I submit that a reasonable person in Mr. Mabry's position would have felt targeted and would not feel free to leave. That is especially so given that Mr. Mabry witnessed the first person be physically obstructed and stopped and become irate as officers patted that first person down. With regard to the second person who was right next to Mr. Mabry, he is standing as the officer approaches with his hands in the air, a sign of submission, a sign again that he does not feel free to leave. And I understand that's not Mr. Mabry, but it adds to the atmosphere. It adds to the totality of circumstances that would make a reasonable person in Mr. Mabry's position not feel free to leave. And finally, there's Mr. Mabry himself, and he is standing in close, the officer is standing in the close personal space of Mr. Mabry, and he is shining a light on him and essentially commanding him to show him his waist. And Mr. Mabry does that. Mr. Mabry shows his waist, not one time, but a second time, and then ultimately a third time. Each of these points is a point of seizure. And I submit that Mr. Mabry was seized from the very first, but certainly throughout this encounter, Mr. Mabry.
Mr. Axum,
yes.
At what point are you saying there was a show of authority?
I would say there was a show of authority from the very moment that the officers exited the car. They didn't walk up in a casual way and say, hey guys, how are you doing?
That would be a rather broad interpretation if we were to say that, wouldn't it be? I mean, when the officers get out of the car without their weapons out, I mean, it's not as if they're charging after somebody. Surely that can't be the show of authority.
No, I'm not saying that there is any one single thing that is the show of authority. I know that it makes it more convenient to understand like the point of seizure. So if I had to identify the strongest show of authority was initially physically stopping someone who is slowly walking away.
That was not Mabry, right?
No, but it conveyed to everyone else there that if you choose not to engage with us, you will be stopped and you will be searched. It was circumstantial evidence to anyone who was present. And I direct the court to United States v. Drayden, where the circumstances are slightly different. They're on a bus, but the court was very clear in deciding that no seizure had occurred. The court, one factor was that no one else had been stopped. One factor was that the exit was not blocked for anyone else to leave. Here, we essentially have, on this limited span of sidewalk, the exit being blocked by the police. And that conveyed to everyone present, we are here to search you and you will comply, even if you attempt to walk away, even if you exhibit like a clear sign that you do not want to engage with us. So that was the first most dramatic point of seizure of all three. While that is going on, there are two other officers engaged with Mr. Mabry and the person right next to Mr. Mabry. So this is a show of force.
At one point, as soon as I think at the outset, well, anyway, during this brief interval where Mabry is actually in conversation with the police, he says, I'm going to leave.
That's correct.
It certainly suggests that anything prior to that did not leave him thinking he could not leave.
Well, the first thing that I would say to that is the test is whether a reasonable person would feel free to leave. And so Mr. Mabry's subjective belief in whether he could leave or not is not the most relevant. It does inform whether a reasonable person would feel that they could leave. But the second thing that I would say to that is when Mr. Mabry says that, the officer has made several demands of Mr. Mabry, demands, commands, and Mr. Mabry has indicated that he does not wish to continue to comply with the officer. Specifically, at that point that Mr. Mabry says, I'm going to leave, he starts to take a step to the left or two steps to the left, and the officer, again with the flashlight, shines the flashlight at him and take steps with him, suggesting again that you are not going to leave. Mr. Mabry already has the circumstantial evidence of the stop of the first person, and I would submit even the stop of the second person, who, when police arrive, is standing as the officer approaches, immediately puts his hands up in a form of submission. So that would convey to a reasonable person that we are all seized.
Did you just say, I just want to be clear about this, that after saying, I'm going to leave, the officer moved in such a way as to make that more difficult?
I would say he did two things. He shined his flashlight on Mr. Mabry a third time. And what I need to say about the flashlight is nonverbal, a nonverbal tool. Of a nonverbal form of communication. Just as holding your hand up without saying anything would indicate halt, the flashlight the officer is using is flashed in a way to get compliance or to control the situation. And at this point, when Mr. Mabry starts to leave, the officer does again shine the flashlight at Mr. Mabry's waist again. And Mr. Mabry, in fact, lifts his waist again while saying, I'm going to leave. So he is still submitting. He's still in compliance. But it's also telling that Mr. Mabry doesn't leave because he doesn't feel that he can. To answer your question very directly, yes, the officer takes steps. You can see his shadow move with Mr. Mabry as Mr. Mabry says, I'm going to leave, and starts to move to the left. The officer moves with him while using the flashlight to control Mr. Mabry. So I would submit Mr. Mabry, yes, was seized definitely at that point.
At that point, he actually does leave, right? Right after the third showing of his waist.
Yes, yes.
What do you do with the district court's finding district court found that the officers observed the defendant, observed the defendant trying to remove trying to move the right side of his body in a way to manipulate the satchel away from the officer. Doesn't that suggest that he was not submitting at that point?
Your Honor, I strongly disagree with that.
With what? With the district court or with what I just said?
I disagree.
Or both.
I'll take both, but I disagree with the characterization, and I disagree that that he was trying to that he was not in compliance, even if you accept that characterization. Mr. Mabry, and taking the second first, Mr. Mabry was not asked turn your body this way or that way. These were nonverbal commands with the flashlight. And Mr. Mabry lifted his shirt. There's no command, you're turning the wrong way. If you look at the video, and this is to the first question, whether there's actually blading or trying to hide or manipulate something, I think those are very strong words for what you see in that video. Because as Mr. Mabry lifts his waist, you can see the satchel. He is not turning that satchel like away. If there is a turn, it is ever so slight. He does not touch it. He doesn't move it. He does not manipulate it at all. So I think that is just a mischaracterization of the record.
Well, even if it's not, do you think, could you make an argument that it really doesn't make any, pardon me? It doesn't make any difference because under your theory, he had submitted before that. Is that?
Yes, absolutely. Mr. Mabry had already submitted by lifting his clothes in the first instance. But the other thing that I think I need to say about that is that the district court said that it didn't have to make a reasonable suspicion determination, didn't have to reach that question at all, because it found that the entire encounter was consensual. So although there's an implication in what the district court says that it could go to reasonable suspicion, the district court has not made that finding in the first instance.
Okay. Unless either of my colleagues has a question, we'll hear from the government.
I do.
Go ahead, Merrick.
I have a couple of questions.
Yeah.
Hold on. Could you hold on just 1 second?
Sure.
Just want to find my place. First, I want to get straight in my mind, sort of a hypothetical. If the police come up to me they say, show me under your shirt. And I say, or they just come up to me and they start asking me questions. And I say, I don't have to answer your questions. I'm a lawyer. I know I don't have to answer your questions. I'm going to leave. Is that submission? Even if they're surrounding me? That's not enough for submission, right? There's two different, there's clearly two different requirements. So there has to be show of authority and submission, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So is that submission if the person says, well, I'm just not going to answer your questions and I'm going to leave?
Well, I think it's very difficult to submit when officers are simply asking questions. So you need that condition precedent. You need the show of authority and asking questions. I think this court has held, simply asking questions is not a show of authority.
Okay, so, what about a command? To which your answer is, I'm not gonna do what you say. I'm a lawyer. I know you don't have any probable cause or reasonable suspicion. I'm leaving. Is that a submission?
I would say yes.
Even if you say no, I'm gonna leave?
Well, I think it depends on what the question is. If the question is, please stand here, will you please stand here? And you say no, and you leave, you have not submitted.
Yeah.
But I'd almost have to say that that in the time it takes you to answer, you have momentarily submitted.
If that's the case, then there's no separation between the show of authority and the submission requirement.
In some circumstances, the separation, I think, would be very quick. Yes.
Well, okay. All right. So just to explain why I'm asking this question, I guess it probably seems obvious. So on the question, I don't have any doubt about a show of authority in this case. The question is when, but there's clearly a show of authority. I'm concerned about when the submission occurs or if there is a submission. So you say he submits by showing his waist. As far as I can tell, there's no command to show the waist. Is that right? At least there's no verbal command that we can hear. Is that right?
There is no verbal command that we can hear to show your waist. That is okay. Correct.
And the burden is on the defendant, on the person who was seized, to show he was seized, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So one reading of what he did with respect to the showing of the waist is he knew he didn't have a gun under the jacket, underneath his shirt. So he was showing the waist not as submission, but as a way to get out. Look, I don't have any gun here. That's what he was doing. That and because if he wasn't commanded to do it, and he did it. Go ahead.
Your Honor, I strongly disagree that he was not commanded to do it, because the use of the flashlight was a nonverbal command. I understand that the law has developed so that we are looking for words from the police, but the use of the flashlight is a nonverbal command. Just like me spinning my fingers around means wrap up, or I could turn my hands so that someone looks behind them.
I mean, you're saying the police can't use a flashlight even to see whether somebody that they're talking to has a gun without that being a command?
No, I'm not saying that, but we know that the officer used the flashlight repeatedly here to control Mr. Mabry, because you can see the video that each time he wants to control him, he moves the flashlight around his waist area. And each time that happens, Mr. Mabry does in fact lift his clothes. Mr. Mabry, if the police had walked up without a flashlight, I find it very hard to believe that Mr. Mabry would have just lifted his clothes. Now,
I understand, but you said it's dark, so it doesn't seem, maybe if there were some other circumstance, but in a dark circumstance, the use of the flashlight to see isn't necessarily a command, it's to see. And then the question is whether Mr. Mabry is responding out of submission or responding out of evasion. Let me ask you another question. So he says, I'm going to leave. Doesn't that indicate lack of submission at that point? I'm going to leave?
Not until he leaves.
Well, why?
Commands are.
Why? If the police come up to me and start demanding that I say things, and I stand there, I say, I'm an American citizen. I can stand on this sidewalk if I want to, and I'm not going to answer you. It's not submission. I mean, normally what might happen after that is the police will put their hands on me, but then we have a physical seizure and we don't have the question of submission. At that point, submission is no longer an issue. But if they don't put my hands on me and we just stand there talking to each other or even yelling at each other, is there a case that says that that's submission?
I'm not sure that there's a case that says a police officer walking up to you and commanding that you do something and you standing there is submission. But there are cases that say if you are there and the police arrive and they command you and you are in the same state that you were in, a court should look at what you were doing before the police arrived. If you were standing there before the police arrived and you're still standing there when the police come, even though you have expressed that you do not wish to engage with the police, you are submitting by remaining there.
Well, in this case, it's about 10 seconds after the last time he says, well, I don't even know if there is a first time because I can't hear it exactly, but and the judge only finds one circumstance in which the defendant says, I'm going to leave. And then 10 seconds later, he leaves. So he says to the police, I'm going to leave. And then 10 seconds later, he leaves. How is that submission?
Submission can be brief, as Brody says, but we can't ignore what is happening during that time. And during that time, Mr. Mabry is being accosted by the police, borderline harassed by the police. And we can't divorce this from what has already happened at that scene. Someone else has been forcibly stopped. Someone else has been patted down while holding their hands up. The officers have descended in force. This is not a casual encounter. This is very targeted and direct. And there is an expectation. The officers are expressing, with all of their behavior, they are expressing an expectation of compliance. And by remaining there, Mr. Mabry is giving compliance. Implicit in the commands that the officer is making, implicit in the command, let me see your satchel, is the directive, you're not free to go until I see your satchel.
No, I agree. I definitely get that. That's why I say I have no problem on the show of authority. I think when he says that at the very latest, that is the moment of a show of authority for sure. Because that's not a may I please, that's a let me see. So I agree with you on that.
And during that time, Mr. Mabry is pleading with him not to show the satchel. Mm-hmm. And that is compliance because he is not fleeing at that time. He doesn't have to, again, if this is consensual, Mr. Mabry doesn't have to stay there for 1 second, for half a second. He can immediately walk away, but he is staying because there's been a show of authority and implicit in that is remain here until, and Mr. Mabry is resisting that. Until he does leave, but that brief compliance is nonetheless compliance.
Okay, thank you, Mr. X.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll hear from the government.
I can't hear you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Nick Coleman, representing the United States. I'd like to begin. It seems to me that appellant is sort of asserting a seizure at either of one of two moments. One is when appellant is initially approached by Officer Volson and shows his waist. The second, of course, is when Officer Volson asks to see the satchel. With respect to the first alleged show of authority, we submit that that isn't, that Judge Friedman certainly did not err in concluding that it was not a show of authority. Officer Volson approached appellant and his companion.
Can I just check with you, Mr. Coleman, that conclusion, is that a fact or a law, this conclusion? Because that obviously matters.
So obviously whether there was a show of authority is a legal conclusion,
okay,
Your Honor. Obviously, as I'll get to, some of the factual findings that Judge Friedman makes, however, are very significant. With respect to that initial approach, Officer Volson walks up to appellant and appellant's immediate companion, who we've called the second man, alone. The other two officers have approached across the street, the third man. So Officer Volson at that point is certainly not surrounding appellant. I disagree with appellant's characterization of what appellant's position was at that point, that he was somehow blocked or impeded. The fence that he's against is a pretty low fence. He's at a corner. He certainly can go, he's not blocked to his left and he's not blocked behind him. Obviously, I suppose if he went in front, Officer Volson's there. And if he went to his right, the other officers are there. But he's certainly not being blocked or sort of kept up against a fence. I don't think that's a fair characterization of what was happening at that moment. As for the pat down of the second man, Judge Friedman, we submit, did not err and certainly didn't clearly err in concluding that that was, in fact, a consensual pat down. If you listen to the tone of voice.
Isn't the point that from the defendant's point of view, he saw two of his friends stopped and patted down by the police. And a reasonable person would conclude from that that they're not, that's a show of authority. That's what he saw.
So Judge Friedman certainly considered that argument, Your Honor, and I think correctly rejected it, because I think you have to take a look at sort of what actually happened, particularly with respect to the second man, who is the one who's right next to appellant. That second man isn't just subjected to a pat down without being asked. He's not ordered to be patted down. He's asked. And if you listen to Officer Volson's tone of voice, since we have that audio on the body-worn camera footage, I think that tone of voice bears out Judge Friedman's finding on that point. It's a consensual request. And I think as the Supreme Court held in Drayton, it's not reasonable for a person to assume that simply because the people that he's with, some of them get patted down. In Drayton, I think even somebody was arrested. That doesn't necessarily mean that appellant or everybody there is being seized or won't be allowed to leave without submitting to a pat down. In fact, if anything, the fact that Officer Volson asks, and certainly in a tone of voice that isn't a command, indicates that the second man had the option of saying no. Now, I think one of the interesting points that appellant is making is that somehow, because the second man raises his hands up as Officer Volson approaches, and then appellant shows his waistband, that was submission.
What about, let me see your satchel, which he says at least five times.
All right. So I think at that, again, that's the second alleged show of authority. And the reason why I think the initial approach is important is because if there has been no show of authority up to that point, then at most what we have, and certainly Judge Friedman concluded that was not a show of authority, that it was a request, and that was a factual finding that it was a request. But even if this court were to disagree
we have the exact same words that Judge Friedman has. Are you talking about the let me show me your satchel? Let me see your satchel?
Let me see your satchel, yes. Judge Friedman did conclude that was a request and not a command.
Wasn't his word question?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Didn't he say that was a question?
Right, a question. But again, a question is different from a command.
But it could not reasonably be characterized as a question. I understand that you want to characterize it as a request, and maybe so, but it's certainly not a question.
So, you know, again, I think that what Judge Friedman was trying to say was he did not interpret it as a command. Even if this court were to disagree with that assessment, the question is, even if it was a show of authority, there still has to be a submission for there to have been a seizure. Appellant certainly does not submit to that.
Mr. Exum's argument is that staying around is the submission.
So I think that is starting to parse things too finely. If the request from the officer is, you know, even if it's a command, let me see your satchel, and the appellant basically says, no, I'm not going to show it to you. I'm going to leave. The officer may repeat it, but there isn't an implicit command there that I see. You have to stay put, that such that we can say that if appellant stays put for a second or two, as he does, that he's somehow submitted to a separate show of authority. The show of authority, if there is one at all, is let me see your satchel. Appellant clearly says, and with respect to the Judge Friedman's, conclusion that appellant was trying to blade his body or turn it away, I don't think that Judge Friedman found that as some sort of service to reasonable suspicion. What he's saying is it's further proof that appellant is not submitting. He is not showing that satchel. So even if this court were to have a concern with Judge Friedman's conclusion that the repeated requests to see the satchel were a show of authority, there's no submission to that show of authority.
But he didn't. He didn't leave at that point. In that sense,
I'm sorry?
He didn't leave at that point.
So again, there's
he didn't leave. In that sense, it's like Delaney, where the defendant just sat in the car and didn't leave, and that was considered submission.
So I think Delaney is a very different.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. So I,
no, go ahead.
I think Delaney was a very different case, Your Honor, for the simple reason that in that instance, the defendant was in a was inside a vehicle. He's parked. And as this court found or ruled, the police officers positioned their vehicle in such a way that it was extremely difficult, if at all possible, for the defendant to be able to move his vehicle and go around the officers. So in other words, to be able to leave in his vehicle, he had to make several turns. And at the same time, the officers used a takedown light. And a takedown light, we submit, is a much different thing from a flashlight. A takedown light is designed essentially to render the driver of a vehicle or whoever that's the searchlight is being pointed at from being able to see very well. So that, of course, if you're in a vehicle, you're parked, the officers put their vehicle in a way that it's almost impossible for you to get around, and then they shine a very bright light in your face. Yeah, you're not really going to be able to move. It's going to be very difficult to get out. That isn't what happens here. And I disagree with appellant's characterization of the use of the flashlight as being some sort of nonverbal command. The flashlight, again, it's designed to be able to see where you can't because it's dark. Certainly, the officer never shines the flashlight in appellant's face in a way that would sort of impede appellant's ability to see what was going on around him, and thus to get out of the way.
Can you see, I saw, now I can't remember from the video, but can you see from the video, maybe Mr. Axman can answer this also on rebuttal, whether he sort of waved the flashlight in a direction indicating, you know, lift your shirt?
I don't see that, see that, Your Honor. I don't see that. And again, I'd have to go back and check, but I don't think that Judge Freeman was asked to make a finding that the flashlight was used in such a way or waved around in such a way that it was a nonverbal command. Appellant lifts his shirt and he does it repeatedly, but I think the better interpretation of that is, yes, he wanted to essentially sort of show the officer, hey, look, I don't have anything.
Isn't the interpretation of that because he wanted to leave and he was showing him that he had nothing under his shirt in order to get the officers to let him leave. So in other words, it demonstrates his, according to the defendant's argument, demonstrates his submission. He had submitted, he was not leaving, he was raising his shirt in order to convince the officers to let him leave.
So Your Honor, what I'd submit here is, again, in order for submission to amount to a seizure, there has to be a show of authority.
We're assuming there has been a show of authority. I agree with you. I kind of see the case the way Judge Garland does. I think there is a show of authority here. The tricky question is this issue of submission. So just assume for a minute that I think there's a show of authority. Why isn't his constant raising of his shirt evidence of his submission? That is, he raised it because he wanted them to let him go.
So I think he wanted to use it to see if he could get the officers to go away. But I don't think that that means that he's trying to leave. There's no indication here that appellant doesn't think he's able to leave. In fact, he tells the officer, I'm going to leave. You have nothing on me. So, again, I don't think that his constant raising of his shirt, which the officer never asks him to do, never says, lift your shirt, show me your waistband. He doesn't do that. Appellant chooses to do that, just as the second man who's with him. He's never told, put your hands in the air. He just does that. And, you know, that doesn't now render what would otherwise be, you know, officers are entitled, and the Supreme Court's been very clear, this court's been very clear, officers can approach citizens on a sidewalk. They can do that. They can approach them. They can ask them questions. And the fact that the person whom they approach decides to do things like lift his hands or in the air or show his waistband doesn't now turn what would otherwise be a consensual encounter into a non-consensual one. Again, it takes two to tango here. And I don't think that, you know, the unilateral act of the person on the sidewalk renders what would otherwise be a consensual encounter to a non-consensual one.
I just have a technical question. What do we do with the fact that So for the second and third times when he raised his shirt, that the audio was on then, and we know what the officer said. We don't know what the officer said the first time, right? Because the officer hadn't turned on the audio at that point, right?
I think that's correct, yeah. But certainly so, I haven't, there's no evidence in the record that he commanded anyone to show me your waistband. There's no evidence in the record.
We have no idea. My point is we have no idea what the officer said at that point because the audio wasn't turned on. So who's, how do we think about that?
The burden is on appellant to show that he was in fact seized.
But how can the defendant, unless the defendant has turned on his phone to record, do the police have an obligation to turn on the audio? How does that work? Could you just explain it to me? What is their obligation? Ask you this. Is the video on all the time or do they have to turn that on too?
My understanding, Your Honor, and again, my understanding, Your Honor, is that the video is always on.
Yeah.
The officers, in order for it to be recorded, they have to hit a button, which will then actually record the data and sort of save it. Uh-huh. And then the audio only turns on after a certain amount of time. I think that has to do with there are data storage issues when you have, sort of that many people with cameras.
I understand that, but should this officer have turned on his audio before he encountered the defendant here?
So I think he did, Your Honor. The problem is that he hits the button as they pull up, but it's that the audio doesn't turn on for, there's a lag. There is a time lag, although the video gets saved. The video feed gets saved before the audio feed begins to get saved.
I see.
All right. Uh-huh. That's my understanding of how it works.
So he didn't hit the button between the first encounter and the first shirt encounter and the second one. It just came on at that point.
I believe he hit his button before they even got out of the car. My understanding. Mm-hmm. So, but the problem is that even if he hits his button at that point, there's going to be a lag in the audio.
It's 30 seconds.
Right. So unfortunately, of course, that means that not everything gets recorded. But after all, I in terms of going back to the question of what could, how is the defendant supposed to be able to prove otherwise? Well, it's kind of how like everybody had to prove these things before there was body worn camera footage or in a case where there isn't video, it's done by testimony. And the judge hears the testimony and draws conclusions based on as to whether he credits testimony and makes factual findings. Now, in this case, my understanding is that appellant did not seek to introduce any testimony as to whether or not Officer Volson commanded him to show his waistband or not during that brief period of time. But again, that's just the evidence that was presented to Judge Friedman, and he didn't clearly err in finding that the lifting of the waistband or the raising of the hands by the second man was not in response to a command. There certainly isn't clear error here as to that point. So again, if going back to the point that I made at the beginning, we sort of have two separate questions here. The first is when Officer Volson approaches appellant and during that initial, he consensually pats down the second man and he's talking to appellant and appellant is showing his waistband. Was that a show of authority such that we have submission and a seizure? Second, when Officer Volson repeatedly asked to see the satchel, was that a show of authority first and was there submission? And I think, certainly what is clear on this record we submit is that there certainly wasn't any submission to any show of authority with respect to the satchel. And without that, without those two findings or without those two sort of pieces of the puzzle, we don't have a seizure. And when appellant runs and then discards the satchel, there are no grounds here for suppression of the evidence.
Okay.
If there are no further questions,
anything else?
No.
Okay. Well, we'd respectfully submit that the judgment should be affirmed.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Axon, you are out of time, but you can take 1 minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. With regard to the body-worn cameras, I believe that Officer Goss testified, and it's my understanding that officers, according to MPD regulations, are supposed to turn on their body-worn cameras before an encounter occurs. And as you can see, that did not occur here. But what happens
is that because there was a delay in the, when the audio came on?
Well, what happens when they press the button, the last 2 minutes are recorded. The previous 2 minutes, because the recorder is always running, the previous 2 minutes are recorded without sound. So if you look at Officer Volson's, you'll see at 2 minutes, you start to hear the sound. But you can see video from before the 2 minutes, from before the sound starts. So it's a 2 minute video with no sound. And then when they press the button, when they hit it, the sound starts. That is recording with sound. So if the officers chose not to press their recorders when they got out the car, which appears to have happened here, you only get sound once they press record.
I think that's correct. At JA81, Mr. Axum, that says just that.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. The burden to show the seizure is on us, but what we have submitted is that the use of the flashlight is a nonverbal command. Like Mr. Mabry wasn't standing on the street and just flipping his clothes up and down. If the officers had truly walked up in a casual fashion to say, hey, what's going on? How's it going? I find it very hard to believe that Mr. Mabry would have just lifted his clothes. But here you have an added factor. You have the flashlight being directed at his waist. And it's not directed at his waist once, twice, it's directed at his waist 3 times. And every single time in that video that it's directed at his waist, he lifts his clothes. There's only one inference to be drawn from that. And that is at the initial point when he gets out and the officer shines at his waist, he is indicating, show me your waist. The last thing that I want to say the point at which the officer is actually making commands, and Mr. Mabry says, come on, I'm going to leave because I don't have anything on me and I'm going to leave. And the officer commands satch. If we believe that up until that point, the entire encounter is consensual, when Mr. Mabry is saying, I don't want to show you my satchel and I'm going to leave, he is withdrawing consent. And when the officer continues to insist, that is seizure. That is seizure, as Mr. Mabry remains there saying, I don't want to be involved with this, but I am remaining because implicit in your commands is that I must remain to negotiate my way out of this because I've already seen someone else's stop. Just as the government said, he wanted to get the officers to go away. He wanted to get the officers to go away is correct because he did not feel free to leave and he was being
Yes. Thank you. Okay, thank you. Mr. Maxson, Mr. Coleman, thank you both. The case is submitted.